5 minutes. I'm sorry, I'm mistaken. I didn't understand you, and we'll sit down.
Yes, the motion is seconded. We hear a second to the motion.
Just a simple discussion.
We did hear a second. We need a vote on this procedural amendment that would limit debate in terms of the time limits that I just discussed. All in favor of this motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion passes. It has been moved and seconded that we limit debate on the main motion to specific times of Tippins for proponents, 5 and 5, and 10 minutes for the proponents, 5 and 5, and 3 minutes for each other member. We'll now move on to the consideration of the resolution. I would like to state the question by reading the resolution before us. Whereas the public mission of the University of California, Berkeley mandates the highest standards of scholarly integrity and transparency, particularly in regard to its relationships with for-profit sources of funding. And whereas the problems resulting from a previous contract with an outside corporation, Novartis, led to an independent review by a team from Michigan State University, which laid out specific guidelines to govern future university industry agreements. And whereas the Michigan State Review explicitly recommends that the university avoid industry agreements that involve complete academic units or large groups of researchers and encourage broad debate early in the process of developing new research agendas, and furthermore warns that there are indications that the overstatement of academic freedom mixed with interest in commercialization is simultaneously eroding the public trust in science and the genuine merits of scholarly autonomy. And whereas the proposed BP contract establishing the Energy Biosciences Institute raises deep questions on all these grounds, be it therefore resolved that the Academic Senate urges the Chancellor that no contract with BP be entered into until a comprehensive review of its terms is executed, with that review taking full account of the recommendations of the Michigan State evaluation. Whereas, oh, I think that's it for that, right?
No.
I will now read the text of the second resolution. The second resolution. Whereas the proposed partnership between BP and the University of California, Berkeley raises a host of concerns, chief among them the integrity of the principle of shared governance, and whereas decisions about appointments and the allocation of resources appear to have gone forward without meaningful and effective academic senate review, be it therefore resolved that the Committee on Committees, in consultation with other relevant Senate bodies, immediately convene an impartial and appropriately supported Blue Ribbon Ad Hoc Committee composed of Senate members not previously involved in the BP negotiations and free of any real or perceived conflicts of interest to review those aspects of the partnership that impinge on the Senate's mandate, to advise the Chancellor of their findings, to provide continued oversight of any subsequent contract between the university and BP, and to develop a set of protocols to govern future contractual agreements between the university and all for-profit funding sources. Professor Wagner, you're invited to speak in favor of your proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Anne Wagner, and I'm professor of art history, and I'm speaking as the designated author of this collective motion, speaking on behalf of the motion. Let me begin by making one thing clear. The resolutions we have brought to the Senate are not born of some naive or quixotic conviction that a great public university should have no truck with the dominant social powers in the world around it, including the great multinational corporations. Instead, this is a debate about the balance that ought to be struck between those massive organizations whose goal is profit and the university whose goals and responsibilities are different. It is about the difference between the university or some of its members entering into productive dialogue with this giant oil company or that network of genetic engineering firms, and the university, or more of it, becoming the corporation's paid servant, with more and more of the outcomes of hired research never entering the public realm, and less of the actual detail of the university-industry agreement being available for the university's normal oversight bodies to inspect and debate. Of course, we know that some, maybe many universities, have thrown up their hands and abandoned the idea that a difference, indeed an active tension, might exist between what a BP wants from research and what a great university community wants. Berkeley shouldn't follow suit. Too much about the rush towards the arrangement with BP suggests that it has. You ask what in the moves taken towards a Berkeley-BP agreement has set alarm bells ringing for so many of us. Of course, the alarm has something to do with our skepticism of BP as a reliable and trustworthy partner. We believe that we have every right, given the public record, to doubt BP's good faith. If it proves true that the proposed contract allows BP to withdraw at any moment, more or less without penalty, then it would be hard to imagine an agreement with fewer safeguards against raw commercial pressure. And what if the head of the EBI is not a Berkeley professor? But it's not these issues that rankle most deeply. If we knew the deal's terms, then at least a debate could begin about their wisdom and compatibility with the university's mission. But we don't know the terms, and if the contract is sealed, we never shall. We're faced, in other words, with a deal between the university and the corporate world on a truly unprecedented scale, making use of scarce land, scarcer resources, and envisaging fundamental changes in the balance and direction of a whole area of Berkeley's teaching and research. A deal pushed through, yes, at warp speed, and only then, after the fact, when faculty started objecting, loosely retrofitted to appear to conform to the university's governance norms. Think of all the available wisdom, not least the recommendations of a report commissioned by the administration itself that have been ignored. Why has the university chosen not even to give the impression of taking into account this wisdom, these norms? We've racked our brains for an answer. Has it learned nothing from the past years of bad smells in the public press? How much more muck is it going to give the muckrakers to rake? Is it likely that the report was ignored out of sheer carelessness or stupidity? No. The more reasonable hypothesis is that things have taken the course they have because the administrators' negotiators believed that BP would not agree to a deal subject to the most elementary forms of transparency. They believed BP wanted a public university services on private corporate terms. This does not surprise us. BP is a multinational oil company, not a foundation or government department. What we are surprised by, what brought on this meeting and these motions, is the university's willingness to go so far to do business with the giant, far enough to renege on shared governance and to deplete its fund of public trust. I am told that many of the scientists in this forum are angry, and that their anger stems from the mistaken belief that their academic freedom is threatened by the motions before you. Many have signed a petition to this effect, a petition also signed in an extraordinary breach of neutrality by Berkeley administrators. This petition is to be found on the website of that still not yet existent entity, the EBI. If academic freedom were really the question, this petition should have been posted on the Academic Senate site. The absence speaks volumes, not least in the present climate, where the most senior administrators are rumored to threaten retaliation, denials of promotion and tenure against those who have called the special meeting, and to declare that that there is only one possible view on this matter, their own. But these rumors, indicative as they are, should not distract us from the fact that the real issue before us is shared governance. That,
Professor Wagner?
And the need for the need for a modicum of transparency, a bare minimum of scrutiny, a bringing of these matters into the light of day. I believe Berkeley's stature, its reputation for both independence and innovation, cannot help but be diminished if we fail to agree on these goals. Thank you.
Woo! Yeah.
Thank you very much, Professor Wagner. May we now hear from a speaker opposing the resolutions as stated? Professor Randy Schechtman, you may have up to 5 minutes, or you may choose to share your time with another.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. My name is Randy Schechtman. I'm a professor in the Department of Molecular and Cell Biology. My remarks will be very brief. Make no mistake, the purpose of this motion is not to render transparent the procedures used to vet the BP biofuels research program. Rather, it is to stifle corporate sponsorship of research on the Berkeley campus by imposing a fail-safe bureaucratic blockade. This is, in spirit and tactic, the same strategy that the opponents of stem cell research in California have used to stall the implementation of Prop 71. Now, 2.5 years on from its overwhelming approval by the voters of the state, our research and teaching enterprise is enriched by private and corporate support, without which much of the scholarly and practical work done in the colleges of engineering and chemistry and the business school, to cite several examples, would not be possible. I very much regret the tone of the opposition, which has introduced a fissure into the normally collegial relations that the natural sciences, humanities, and social sciences have enjoyed here at Cal. Do we really wish to see our campus reduced to the level of squabbling that characterizes a fractious place like Harvard? We are ill-served by colleagues who would refer to the proponents of the BP biofuels deal as prostitutes, as was characterized of the chancellor at the last meeting. Don Imus was fired by CBS for such remarks. And although I very much regret that we don't have such a sanction to offer to the individual who made that remark last time, we do have the power of an amendment, which I will rise to offer a brief in a few minutes. Thank you.
Professor Wagner, you are now called upon to speak on behalf of your second resolution. Again, you'll have 5 minutes that you can use or allocate it if you see.
Mr. Chairman, I have put all of my words before this body. Thank you.
Professor Schechtman? I think you have an amendment that you want to offer?
Yes, I'm mentioned. I think this is on the computer. If we can call the amendment to the resolution, please. We have two parts to this resolution. You've been handed yellow pages that state Resolution A. I can read for you. Whereas the public mission of the University of California, Berkeley mandates the highest standards of scholarly integrity and transparency, particularly in regard to its relations with sources of private funding, and given the position of the system-wide academic senate on this issue, be it resolved, cognizant of the memorial passed and ratified by the system-wide academic senate in 2006, that the academic senate instruct the chair of the Berkeley division to advise the chancellor that grave issues of academic freedom would be raised if the campus were to deviate from the principle that no unit of the university, whether by faculty vote or administrative decision, has the authority to prevent a faculty member from accepting external research funding based solely on the source of the funds. Policies such as the Faculty Code of Conduct are already in place on our campus to uphold the highest standards and integrity of research, the Academic Senate believes that any intervention on the basis of assumptions about the moral or political standing of the donor is unwarranted.
Professor Shackman, please. The parliamentarian advises me that what we need from you is a motion that you want to amend the resolved clause in the previous.
Yes. Mr. Resolution. Chair, I move that we substitute, that we amend the motion as it stands with, at least in the first part, Resolution A that I've just read.
Mr. Chair, point of order. Is that truly an amendment or a substitute? It seems much more of an
amendment in the nature of a substitute.
The parliamentarian advises me that an amendment can take the form of a substitute motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion? Please.
David Hollinger, Department of History. I speak in favor of the Shekman Amendment. I think as we deliberate today, we need to be particularly aware of the danger that Professor Shekman alerted us to of a division within this Senate between those who work primarily in the natural sciences and engineering and the rest of us. I speak to this concern partly in my capacity as someone who recently served a term as chair of the Academic Freedom Committee of the National AAUP, in which I became acutely conscious of a series of ideologically driven attacks on higher education in this society, and the extent to which most of these attacks are against the humanities and social sciences. It is imperative as we go forward in the next stage of the relations between higher education and society that we stand together. And if this means that some of us who might have some doubts about some of the directions of corporate research on the campus, we need to give a little bit of ground. Fortunately, we have a process in motion whereby existing Senate committees, this speaks now to the other amendment resolution that will soon be for us, we'll have existing Senate committees involved in regular and extensive institutionalized consultation. The way to strengthen our Senate is to have our existing institutions operate fully. The Shekman Initiative seems to be consistent with that. Let me point out further that the particular clause about academic freedom in the substitute amendment now before us is taken from a statewide document. I'm not sure the statewide document maybe was the best. I would have phrased it a little bit differently myself. It makes it difficult, for example, to argue against tobacco-funded research. Nonetheless, the cat is out of the barn, the horse is out of the barn. Whatever animal it is, I don't like it. But we are in a barnyard and we need to clean it up.
Yes.
Professor Walker, Department of Geography, Richard Walker. I just want to say before we proceed that this idea of this vast schism being created by our motion is very misleading. In fact, it's the overreaction of the counter petitioners, as characterized in Professor Shankman's comments, that has created this vast wedge. The issue before us was not about stifling corporate-sponsored research by a blockade of corporate-sponsored research. That's completely inappropriate. It has nothing to do with the original motion. It's a total red herring to introduce the attack on stem cell research by right-wing members of the California public. And this kind of overreaction has no place here. The problem with the substitute motion is that it follows from that in this wonderful ringing declaration of academic freedom, excuse me, which is fine, but which is also redundant because the statewide academic senate has already passed this. But the issue before us was, as stated by Professor Wagner, was about the terms under which this contract was negotiated and would be signed, and getting an adequate review of that contract, and seeing that this whole process is open, and that the results in terms of the faculty code of conduct would be results open to the usual standards of academic inquiry, carrying no baggage of patent law or other kinds of trade secrets restrictions in that contract. That's what we want to know. That's what has to be opened and aired out in this forum and in the, what goes forward from here in terms of the university's negotiations and our review of those negotiations as the academic senate. Thank you.
Thank you, John Taylor, Plant and Microbiobiology. I wanted to offer a little bit on the history of the compromise amendment. And I want to point out that we first became aware of the action against or worried about, concerned about the BPE agreement from the website and petition. And then we learned that a special meeting had been called. And so we drafted a resolution and developed our own website in hopes of rallying support among those in the scientists who felt exactly as Professor Shekman said, completely threatened by the resolution and our ability to have free inquiry in our research. And so having produced that amendment, we then became aware of work by the system-wide academic center. And we became aware of the email that you sent around in which you had constituted a committee of academic senate members to oversee the agreement. So we, in the first change, we changed our initial amendment to be in line with those two items, the work that was already done by the system-wide academic senate and the work that you'd done. Then we met with the other side in a meeting with deans from Letters and Science, and we further modified the resolution to come to the compromise that's before you today. Thank you.
Further discussion?
Professor Tim Duane from City Regional Planning, Landscape Architecture, Environmental Planning. I came today not to support BP or oppose BP, not to support or oppose individual inquiry and academic freedom, not to support or oppose collective faculty governance. I think that individual inquiry as an interpretation of academic freedom is completely consistent with collective governance as interpretation of academic freedom. I think that we need to get past this false dichotomy that we have to choose between either unfettered individual inquiry from any source with whatever restrictions there might be substantively upon the disclosure or the inquiry itself, and distinguish that from the idea that we have to have some collective governance that necessarily involves restrictions upon individual inquiry. I don't think that's the choice we have here. I think we actually have a set of procedural concerns about whether both the rights of